Hello and welcome to another special episode of Word Goblins. You're listening to your favorite hosts ever, or you're going to listen to your favorite hosts ever, Hina and Tasha.
Yeah, you haven't listened to us yet, but you're about to listen to us.
Mm-hmm. You're in for a treat.
As always, here on Word Goblins, where we get a little bit grumpy about popular words in culture. And yeah. This is kind of a special episode because, I don't know, do you want to break the news, Hina?
You do it.
I took over. This is kind of a special episode because this is one of our last episodes. And, you know, it's not goodbye, it's see you later.
Yes.
Because we might be coming back, we don't know yet, but we're going on a hiatus.
Until the foreseeable future, that is correct. I am leaving CATR. I'm sorry, Tasha.
I'm extremely upset, but I'm happy for your new career choices, and it's going to be really exciting for you.
Thank you. Thank you. So this has been a roller coaster. It's been a great journey. It's been fun. And what more can we ask for other than come on live radio and be haters on Maine?
Yeah, I think it's been really fun that this was part of our job and was part of your job for so long to put together this show and to have an excuse to just like dig into something unnecessarily, which I will do in my daily life
anyway.
Regardless. So the fact that I could sit on air with you and do it has been really nice, and I hope that it's been at least somewhat entertaining to listen to.
For sure. Yeah. The episode for today is something that has been brewing for a long time. Mm-hmm. It's something that Tasha and I have just talked about at work, off work. The brain never really turns off, I guess.
Especially when you have insomnia.
Oh, yeah. We want to talk about fitness culture. We want to talk about the cult of fitness. And what is up with that?
Yeah, as with anything that we can look upon as somewhat culty and cultish, mm-hmm. there's always an infamous language that comes with it. I don't think you can have something that we could sort of loosely define as a cult without there being lingo attached to it. So,
absolutely. Why don't I throw a question to you, Tash? Are you a fitness girly?
No, absolutely not. I used to be, I think, is why this topic kind of came up naturally in conversation.
Tea.
I wish that I didn't have this relationship, but like most people, I sort of fell into the trap of treating my body like it was a project to kind of be worked on, to be solved in a lot of ways. And in that world, I followed a lot of fitness influencers that kind of like pushed me a little bit deeper down this path of like body dysmorphia and like disordered eating. And in a really like loose surface level way, I'm not talking about deep, deep trauma here, but it is something that I definitely experienced. The deeper I got into it, the more I started really focusing on my fitness goals and the things that I wanted out of my body. And my body is of a particular nature that I can't work out that hard. Like, I don't have the capacity for tough cardio, even though I like it and I enjoy it and I loved running. But I'm more of a person who needs like long periods of walks without something that won't totally exhaust myself. Mm-hmm. I just have really low levels of cortisol, and I actually just hit a wall. And that's something that I didn't know about myself for a long time. So while I was consuming this content and working towards these somewhat unattainable goals for my body, I was totally and completely exhausting myself day in, day out. I made myself run every day because I thought it was generally, umbrella term, good for me. Mm-hmm. In fact, it was very bad for me. I put my body under a lot of stress because I thought that that was the way to do it. And now I don't really have a choice. My body let me know pretty quickly that this was not a good path for me. I had to stop. I fell out of it pretty quickly. I also never reached the same goals that the people that I was following and looking to for advice had reached. I just have a different body. It's hard. It sounds so simple, but it is. It's really hard to get your brain around it sometimes when you're fed this narrative of like, you can work towards it. You mm-hmm. can do it. Everybody is capable. You just have to get up and try. Like this whole thing about just like get up and, you know, one day at a time. Like it's not, I guess what I'm trying to say, it's not an easy platitude. Doesn't work for everybody. And I realized really fast it didn't work for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Damn, that sounds tough. Thanks for sharing.
Yeah, are you a fitness girl?
Oh God, no. I wish, I used to do my best to skip PE lessons back in school. I wasn't feeling well, or I got my period often is something I would tell my gym teacher.
Nice.
Yeah.
Your gym teacher is probably like, that girl's menstrual cycles. Am I right?
Before I dive deep into it, I just want to say you're listening to CADR 101.9 FM Vancouver, broadcasting live from the traditional, ancestral, and unceded land of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people. And this is We're Goblins.
Yes, you are.
Some of the terms that came up and I am privy to, unfortunately, gym bro, gym rat, mm-hmm. never skip a leg day is a phrase I hear a lot. And most people use it unironically. Do you know what bro science is?
Bro science?
Mm-hmm.
I can infer.
Yeah, please do.
It's just that kind of like dude coded hustle culture, like bite-sized science, biology for, you know, for the people, for the guys.
You're onto something.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it is word of mouth knowledge, like quasi knowledge mm-hmm. passed off as a fact, primarily among bodybuilders and weightlifters. And oh my God, a lot of bro science is so prevalent within the fitness culture.
Mm-hmm.
And something that I was, while I was doing my research, came up that fitness culture is some, you know, like a, you want to, I mean, I guess we can try and explain it as like a sociocultural phenomenon around exercise and physical fitness. And it comprises of many subcultures. So there is a whole yoga community within that. They have their own code of conduct and like set values, and then you have kickboxing, and then you have spin classes, and then there are diet fads within it, and then a lot of like gym culture. And it's not a new trend for sure. Definitely a very oversaturated market, but also a $1 million industry. I mean, we saw a rise in the 80s with Jane Fonda's workout videos mm-hmm. targeted specifically towards older women in those like bright leggings and leg warmers and like an 80s perm. I think that was maybe one of the first instances where fitness culture became part of the mainstream.
Yeah, it is actually relatively new mm-hmm. as a cultural landmark, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Starting with Jane Fonda and maybe loosely jumping off of the bodybuilders just before as well. But that is sort of like a more extreme place for it to start, and it being kind of like pushed to a greater public of, you know, that anybody can participate, and rather everyone should participate in fitness as cardio or as weightlifting, not to compete but just for health mm-hmm. is a relatively new concept
for sure, regardless of demographics,
yeah,
gender, class, etc. And so there's like
cortisol
this
levels.
Of course, also that. And there's this quote unquote, the way it's sold is like the accessibility and like maybe surface level, yeah, it is. But then the deeper you dig into it, it is very one dimensional. And there is this expectation of like sameness, which you hit on a little while ago. And the idea of the Instagram body and how you could have that too. Mm-hmm. If only you worked harder. And it's wild to me that people still buy into it. And I'm not, again, I'm not blaming the victim, but I guess if you don't really think about it too much, and if that's what, that's the content you're consuming 24/7, your newsfeed is filled with that, I think it's, you have to do a lot of active deprogramming to really get away from that, because it's really in our faces and the culture is so pervasive.
Yeah, and I think when we're talking about fitness culture, there is a shift between the culture that you spoke of with the Jane Fonda workout videos, which were videos and they were cast and people were cast into roles. So you're looking at idealized forms. But I think mostly what that would consist of is like people in gym spaces and in like fitness centers. And you just kind of get this like group of people wearing whatever they're wearing, looking like whatever they're looking like. And that has shifted in recent years into a culture of photographs. And so what you get is like a shaved down version of reality. You don't really get the people at like the tennis club or something. What you get instead is like photos of idealized figures playing tennis. And photos are just a different way of expressing culture.
A picture is worth 1,000 words.
Yeah. In fact, it's worth like 3 words, and it's look like this.
Period. That's okay, you raise a good point. Going back to Jane Fonda's videos, I will say, I mean, obviously I didn't grow up with that, but compared to like, and I don't want to romanticize the past being so much better, but that just feels to me more harmless, because at the end of the day, everyone knows Jane Fonda is a famous actress. She's doing this work home workout videos for women who cannot go to the gym for whatever reason, and there is all this choreography and it's almost performance art, so you can still detach yourself from it and be like, oh yeah, she's not like me, and that's okay.
Yeah, exactly.
But what can be very insidious about platform media is everyday regular people who are just like you, in quotations, who look beautiful and flawless in these singular idealized bodies. And it's like, oh, this girly from freaking Utah is perfect and is just like me, has a 9-to-5 HR job. Why can't I do what she's doing? And so that, like, we've talked about this, like, authenticity being sold to us and the relatability and how that feeds into, like, desirability politics, because a lot of them are trying to make a career out of it. A lot of them want to reach a level of an influencer, like from a micro influencer to like a big influencer, where they like actually have their own products, have their own line, have their own meal plan, workout guides, etc. But you don't really know that, because obviously they have to be subtle about it. And so that's what's so wild to me, because it's like they are regular people, but they're also not.
Yeah, and I think you're so right. What is being sold are different things fundamentally. And in one case, presumably, you've already bought the product. If you're watching a Jane Fonda workout video, like, you are kind of being sold the aspiration of looking like this, but you have already purchased the thing.
You bought the DVD, you bought the cassette, and that's it. The relationship ends.
Yeah, the consumer relationship is over, whereas the consumer relationship with and a fitness influencer is ostensibly never over.
No.
And what you're being sold is just a broader spectrum of things. Like you said, there's a meal plan too, probably, and there's maybe workout gear. Like, there's a lot to buy into, and you're also buying into authenticity, which I think is so important, because with a workout video, and sidebar, I have a VHS tape of a Cher workout video, and it's iconic, and I love her. And what you're buying there is, you already know that they're a celebrity. They already live in their celebrity space. Mm-hmm. And, like, you aren't being sold the everydayness.
Weirdly enough, and this is when you hit your 30s and you're like, wow, my mom was onto something. The older generation, the divide, the gap between celebrity culture, influential culture, and regular people was more real than now, because we have talked about this at arm's length, how it's so diluted and distorted that everything is possible and we're always, there's like more and more and more being shoved down our throats. But I remember, I have this distinct memory of a South Asian actress who started her own John Fonda-esque workout videos, and my mom bought a tape, and she's trying to like do these workouts. And I remember ultimately, like, she was trying this one routine and it was really hard. And she's like, oh, you know, like, she has a whole team looking after her, but it's just me with kids. So obviously, like, it's not going to be possible for me. But sounds very straightforward, but that doesn't happen anymore because you're kind of really enmeshed into this warped sense of reality on Instagram and TikTok where you forget that they are not real people.
Yeah, being cognizant of the gap between like consumer and product and knowing that you're being sold a very specific thing and knowingly buying into it is different than unknowingly buying into a whole host of things like I did when I was starting, you know, trying to get into like weightlifting and thinking erroneously that, you know, following a bunch of people wouldn't be harmful because it would teach me something about how to do a lot of the moves that I was looking to learn how to do. What I stumbled into doing was buying a product that I didn't want. And it is insidious because, you know, it works on you even though you can be aware of it. I just think, like you said, that gap has been like really it is no longer as wide as it used to be.
Bring back the gap.
Bring back the gap and mind the gap.
Also that. Yeah, for sure. I mean, we definitely like we are people who are able to think about it critically, having gone on our own journeys. I definitely have unfollowed folks, not particularly fitness influencers, but just influencers in general, who I was like, oh, I don't know if this particular content on my feed is making me feel good. And so definitely, I'm not beyond being sold things. Like, I was part of that too, and having to make that conscious decision, which a lot of people are not able to make because of age or whatever. And so, especially if you're vulnerable and naive, I can see how damaging this pervasive fitness culture can be, and constantly being parroted this ideology can just really take a toll on you, like leading to, I don't know, like, yeah, anxiety and depression and body dysmorphia and eating disorders. And I know it sounds dramatic, but it's really not, because just imagine constantly trying to achieve a very unrealistic body standard, because it's a glimpse of reality you're seeing, but then there is so much more happening in people's lives in terms of like their socioeconomic status and their body type and I don't know, like late stage capitalism and where you come from and how certain bodies are, where you grew up or your ethnicity. But that's not something that is, it's almost kind of this like weird, bizarre utopia where it's like, okay, we're all kind of the same, which is a sweet idea, but it's also really wild and untrue.
Yeah, and the difference between engaging in fitness, just generally for your health, for fun, whatever, and being part of, say, like a team sport or heading to a local community center to work out or doing workout classes, which I did a lot as a teenager. I used to go to workout classes, and the vibe is you're in a room with a bunch of people just in real time, in real space, witnessing just life around you. And I know that also sounds really dramatic, but the difference between that and looking at pictures is just, it's so vast. And so my sense of what it meant to be like fit and well when I was taking fitness classes around other people, just looking like whatever, was vastly different than my sense of self and sense of health when I was looking at pictures of idolized forms. And I mean, I think that when you put it that way, it seems really clear that it could be extremely harmful, and that you are in this world the sum of everything that you pay attention to. And if you are paying attention to these things, that's how you're going to view yourself and how you're going to view health and fitness.
Of course.
And I think it's especially harmful to women. I mean, it's harmful to everybody, but, you know, there are already so many ways in which to be in the world as a woman and boxes to be put into. Like, it's just a tough one, health and fitness, and how ableist it can be, how fatphobic it can be. The list goes on.
Oh, yeah. And it's constantly, and again, I know a lot of fitness influencers are cognizant of a lot of identity politics now and body politics and whatever, but still, ultimately, I can't help but have this gripe with the subtle messaging that they can code it and be like, no, 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 we're all about health, but the subtle coding and just the reinforcing and perpetuating that narrative of thin is better.
Yeah.
And just that kind of like the goal, and it is always a thin white body, and you have a flat stomach, and it's, I don't know, like genetics.
Why is the stomach the signifier of fitness just overall? Like if I were to clean my brain and someone said, okay, now picture something for fitness, the first thing I would think about is a flat stomach.
I know.
It's just like, it's the iconography of like holding up the shirt and it's just like washboard.
Absolutely.
It's sneaky.
Can we leave the poor pod belly alone?
Leave my stomach alone.
Leave the food baby alone?
Yeah. Do we have time before the break to bring up one more point that I want to bring up?
Sure.
That we've been circling around, so I just kind of want to say it before it's too late.
Or should we take a break and then come back?
Or do we leave him hanging?
Yeah.
Oh.
Okay. Well, excited to hear what you have to say in a short minute.
Moon River, the collaborative new project for members of the Juno-nominated Indie Folk Mainstays, The Wooden Sky and Linda Ortega, Kathleen Edwards, and Corb Lund's bands, could easily be described as a supergroup of sorts. Not just because of their collective talents, but because the music on their debut album, Volume 1, is simply super. Their knack for creating sonic worlds that are at once lightly trippy and wholly inviting means that as much as they draw on inspirations from decades past, they maintain a pleasing, distinctly out-of-time feel. Described as Buddy Holly meets krautrock, it's something that you need to hear to fully comprehend. And Vancouverites will have the chance on April 5th at Green Autobody at 1822 Pandora Street, alongside Brandon Wolf Scott and Jody Glenham. Advance tickets are on sale now via Eventbrite for $22.63. So get yours now and mark your calendar to see Moon River live on Friday, April 5th. MRG Live presents Shred Kelly at the Biltmore Cabaret on March 29th, 2024, with special guest Hyenas. Hailing from the Canadian Rockies, Shred Kelly is a powerhouse band that seamlessly blends elements of alternative, folk, and rock, making them a mainstay in the Canadian music scene. With a reputation for dynamic live performances, you won't want to miss their Blurry Vision album release tour. Check out Shred Kelly at the Biltmore Cabaret on March 29th, 2024. Tickets are on sale now at admitone.com.
Hi, I'm Confused, aka Julie B, aka Zigzag Stardust, aka the host of Musish, and I would really love it if you could tune in every second Friday from 11 a.m. till noon and hear me turn the stuff that inspires me into weird audio improv. There's sound collages, there's local music, there's hot off the presses hit tracks, and it's waiting. It's for you. It's for us. It's made by us. So get at me, come on in, and stay inspired in the meantime.
The annual Sled Island Music and Arts Festival is back, June 19th to 23rd. Experience 5 days of music, comedy, film, and art in diverse venues across Calgary, Alberta. Featuring New York experimental hardcore trio Show Me the Body as guest curator, incisive Chicago rapper Mick Jenkins, Los Angeles indie rockers Cherry Glazer, genre-bending rap artist Carrie Foe, Montreal-based hip-hop trio Planet Giza, 70s Zamrock revivalist's Witch, renowned soundscape composer Laurel Halo, British electronic producer Forest Swords, eminent post-punk three-piece Wombo, Philadelphia hardcore punk group Soulglow, and many more. Plus, there's over 150 more artists still to be announced. Check out the current lineup and get your passes and tickets at sledisland.com.
Welcome back, listeners. You're tuned into CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver, and this is We're Goblins. We're talking about fitness culture.
Yep, the fitness industrial complex and yep. The words and the language that surrounds it and the way in which it's pretty, what would you say, coercive?
It is coercive, absolutely. And never skip a leg day. Never not skip a leg day.
Yeah. I mean, speaking about some of these phrases, some of these one-liners and words.
Dish.
Something that I noticed when I was doing my little scrape for influencers and the way in which they talk online was that a lot of these terms seem to be very utilitarian, and mm-hmm. they treat the body like a project. And so you get things like talking about your progress and to show up, or things that will like be a game changer, or like reboot your body, your fitness goals. Fueling the body is a big one. Real measurable lasting change, like things that feel really detached from any sort of emotionality regarding the body. Mm-hmm. And it's all very utilitarian. An old one, no pain, no gain.
Mm-hmm.
It is like project-based speaking. And I mean, I think it comes from a world of coaching that primarily situates itself in the idea that the client is broken and needs to be fixed.
Mm-hmm.
And so what better way to fix something than to treat it like a car, you know, and talk about just like fueling up for the day. And this is how the language of fitness can be really persuasive, because in those words, it situates itself in the idea of a kind of meritocracy that, you know, if you just put in enough work, that you will get there. And what's even worse is that this language is paired with a flat, non-moving image of someone that is, like, cast into a role, posed in a certain way. And that image has its own embedded language that is to say, like, this is the goal. This is the thing you're reaching for. Mm-hmm. So that's why we think of things like flat stomachs and
six abs.
Abs, because that is the thing that
six pack. I meant. I believe you said six abs.
Did you say six abs?
That's
only six. Yeah.
How much I know about.
I picture six abs
fitness
whenever I'm doing power curls.
As you should, Johnny Bravo.
Yeah, and I think this. Yeah, I think this language that is it also kind of connects itself to a like a bioessentialism that like bodies are just this one way. And you just have to shape them. Oh, talking about like shapewear and like toning. These are all things that are like you can't control your flesh this way.
Toning. I'm not a printer.
Good one.
Thank you.
But I mean, it's true. You're not a printer. You're not an object that you can manipulate in that way. And sure, any amount of like consistent exercise will have its changes, but mm-hmm. The amount of control that you have over that, I think, and I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, I think it's very minimal. Like, I don't think that you could sit down and do a certain amount of work on a certain body part long enough to get the desired achievement. I don't think bodies are like Play-Doh in that way. And I have been sold this idea that my body was like something that I could change if I just put in enough work.
Mm-hmm.
And so then shame is tied into it, because certainly if you don't put in enough work,
shame,
you're not going to get
guilt,
the thing.
Fear. We're sold this dream, this utopian dream. And it's so much tied to American exceptionalism, right? Like
mm-hmm.
I was telling you earlier, the phrase that I've heard so much and never really questioned it, but now I think about it and how wild it is, be the best version of yourself. And that, let me tell you, is a very limited idea. There is only one way to be the best version of yourself. You can't be fat and be the best version of yourself. And so there's so much fat phobia within the fitness culture that mm-hmm. people are never going to outright say. But the more you dig deep, the more you find the dark sides of it. Spot fat reduction is something that I learned. And
that's so utilitarian.
I know.
That's the perfect phrase
yeah.
for treating your body like it's a printer.
Totally. And you know what? Spot fat. Okay, first of all, what?
Okay. Reduce it.
Reduce it. Reduce get it. Rid of it. Cut it. But also, there are, I was listening to a dietitian and someone who has a background in nutrition science. And she essentially debunked this myth that a lot of, unfortunately, influencers have been perpetuating. You cannot target one part of your body and get rid of the fat. That just it's not how it works, because a lot of, unfortunately, young, vulnerable women in the comment section were like, oh, I just ate a piece of chocolate or whatever, and now I'm feeling bloated. I mean, our stomachs, even throughout the day, are going to morph and change, because right after dinner, like, your stomach is going to be more bloated, and that is okay. Mm-hmm. You cannot, first of all, flat stomach. I mean, don't we have better things to strive for? Like, maybe
no,
the downfall.
The single image of fitness.
Of capitalism, I don't know. Or, like, maybe less racism?
And I mean, honestly, if your idea of liberation is a flat stomach, you maybe need to rethink some things.
Yeah, that's really sad.
That is for a former version of myself as well. Because, I mean, I also was fed the idea of like, oh, I'm actually looking for strength. Like, I'm just building my strength. And if you focus on this like kind of bullshit idea that you're here because you want to get stronger, but you're also looking at images that are saying entirely different things to you.
Yeah, and it's also, again, in that whole myth, it's kind of the idea and mindset of female empowerment, right? It's mm-hmm. like, oh yeah, this is how you get empowered. And it's so removed from reality. It's so exclusive. And not a lot of people maybe question that. And I get it when you're so deep into it. And something that is also very sinister is how fit bodies, fitness is so deeply tied to productivity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is how you're going to be a girl boss, right? Take your control of your life, have a career. And also something that is time and again reinforced is the idea of how rest has to be earned.
Mm-hmm.
If you didn't work out, or often I used to be of that mindset. Oh, I didn't do anything all day. I don't know why I feel tired. And almost feeling guilty.
Yep.
For, I don't know, my body just is trying to tell me that it's tired. And because I didn't do anything, I mean, maybe it's my emotions or something that could be weighing on me, but that's completely, as you said, like, there is no emotionality to it. It's very much like, oh, but you didn't do anything.
Yeah, as if you know the inner workings of your body innately, as if you know everything that's happening that may be contributing to this.
Mm-hmm.
We are fed this idea that it's actually just like input output. Like, if I'm tired, it must be because I went for a run. And if I'm tired because I was sitting all day, then it's not worth being tired.
Totally. If I'm tired, I'm lazy, I'm a dirtbag.
Yeah.
What if I want to be a dirtbag?
What if I want to be a dirtbag?
And this idea of, like, almost being an assembly line,
mm-hmm.
right? And, yeah, no, I can see it being, I mean, I know this word is really overused, but toxic.
Yeah.
And we have seen so many diet fads, right? Which straight up have been harmful and later been debunked or recalled. Like, I remember a while ago, there was this detox tea that blew up.
Yeah, and you know what it was? Media. It was to fight bloat. It was your stomach once more. The stomach, I swear, is like the icon of the fitness world.
May I say?
It's like flat tummy tea.
Of course.
What else are you eating for? That's ladies, am I right?
Very navel-gazy.
Literally.
So I had to make that joke.
Yeah, I mean, not to mention if there are hordes of people out there who are not eating enough to be like properly fed for the day, and then working off everything they eat immediately out of fear, you're going to be like more tired, you're going to have more brain fog. It creates this world of people who are not exactly well equipped to go after the things that they want in life, but mm-hmm. rather are spending all of their time and energy in this one place. Maybe I'm just speaking from experience, because I did not feel my best, nor was I my most creative mm-hmm. when I was really focused on working off everything that I ate and eating the right things so that I could work out. It's like a never-ending loop.
Yeah, not that I have tried very hard, but I will say, if I were to be restrictive with my eating, I mean, A, I love food, but also I would just be unhappy.
Yeah.
Food definitely is one of the very few joys in life. And I mean, okay, if you want to talk about our bodies as if they are cars, like, you need that fuel.
Yeah, exactly.
You need sustenance. And that reminds me, there is a subgenre of videos under the fitness culture that are quite popular, What I Eat in a Day. And it's mm-hmm. often fitness influencers who are going to just kind of do like a whole inventory of their meals. And they're often, those videos have been critiqued as like, you're not getting enough nutrition, you're not getting enough carbs. Like, how are you able to really go by your day, sustain yourself, and actually, I don't know, like, show up in relationships, show up for yourself? Like, there's so many things, and again, sounds so basic to say, but so many things outside fitness, right? And when we call someone mm-hmm. a gym bro, or when we call someone a gym rat, I suppose what we're saying is like, that is kind of their whole personality. And I just can't imagine that much like obsession. Like, I can see why it would drive you into this kind of state of infatuation with your body if it's your only focus. And I don't know, maybe we need to have more body neutrality.
I mean, something that I do want to give credit to some folks out there that are working in this world do and are currently pushing is intuitive eating, which is mm-hmm. I think it is hilarious that we're even at this point where we have to put a category out there, a term for something that should be intuitive already, you know, that we have to like package it and sell it because we so desperately need it mm-hmm. to push the idea that, hey, you should just be eating like when you're hungry, based on what you feel like when you kind of want to, because we've been in this world where we've feigned control over our flesh for too long, or have been sold the idea that you can control everything about your body and how it functions and what it looks like, and you just can't.
No. Or like, yeah, of course, it's not all good and bad. Like, that's very binary, and that's not what we're trying to say here. You can you have control over your body to some degree, but then that's it. Mm-hmm. Like, it's also just like learning when to let go, looking at fitness influencers with a grain of salt. Like, ultimately, they are, I know I said they're not real, but what I meant was they live in their own world. But they're also real people and are fallible. A lot of them don't really have knowledge or expertise in nutrition and food science. And then they come on and say, again, spew bro science, and people take it at face value. But that's just one of the things that has been really problematic. And so really just doing your research if you're really committing to this bit. And I see, again, I am not really invested and really into this world that deeply, but I see it shifting in some ways. We see people with various body types talking about fitness, I suppose, and kind of having more awareness of the realities we live in. I remember something that was very revolutionary when that research came out was how BMI is inherently racist. And yeah. I mean, my parents saw that as like a holy grail.
The pinnacle of health.
It was, right? Yeah. Like, that's how we were raised. And then it was like, oh, most of the research that was done for BMI were on white bodies, were on male bodies. And it's especially very problematic to like sort of like a lot of Black folks, for example, and there is inherent anti-Blackness in that, and it just doesn't work that way. And so kind of the same thing goes with fitness culture in some mm-hmm. ways, right? Yeah, just be a little skeptical. A little skepticism goes a long way.
Yeah, and I will add to that that it's less like we need a media literacy moment here, but rather that we really just have to treat our attention like it's the most valuable resource and pay attention to the things that you're paying attention to, because that is also kind of what perpetuates this whole thing.
Yeah.
I mean, the more eyeballs on a thing, the more that thing is going to be packaged and sold in different mm-hmm. ways, and it will continue to espouse this like language of like body as project, body has like some sort of utilitarian function that has to look and move and act a certain way. Mm-hmm. And if you don't want to be in the cage of viewing your body that way, like a printer, then paying attention to it less will help. And maybe the language surrounding fitness will change, but the language is as it is right now because of the product that it needs to sell.
Yeah, totally. It's this like self-improvement idea, right? Mm-hmm. But then the self-improvement is our sad bodies, and it's taking it to an extreme. It is focusing and leaning into your body every second of the day. And that sounds exhausting. Yeah.
Like, you, the consumer, are broken and you need to be fixed.
Let me help you, yeah. dear little child. But also, yeah, like, maybe disassociating time and again from our bodies is good.
And you know what I would love to see in utopian fitness culture of the future? Mm-hmm. I would love to see it be more of a collective thing again. Like, I have this, like, daydream about joining, like, a beer league soccer team or something like that. Like, I can't play sports, and that's the reality. But I want to get back to a fitness space where it's about people getting together in a place and just, you know, engaging in sport or weightlifting or whatever the F that you're doing.
Yeah.
Together. And it's just like a real, I don't know, collective effort. And it doesn't look pretty.
No.
But I like that it's messy and gross and weird in the way that bodies just normally are.
Lots of flabby stomachs.
Yeah.
I need to see more of that.
And I think the language would change. It would maybe still be aspirational. It maybe still be like, you know, just sort of like pseudo-motivational speak that is like, yeah, cheesy, but I think it would be less utilitarian leaning if we weren't talking about photos.
Sure. Yeah.
So that's where I think it could go and be really cool.
I need... Yeah, like, again, that's the thing, right? Community mm-hmm. has been so commodified, and I don't want to live in a reality where someone posting a photo of their stretch marks is radical. Like, girly, yeah, I don't know what to like, tell you. It's like, hey, she's just like us. Like,
once again, the stomach. The stomach was a big one.
Again.
You know, if you wanted to keep it real as a fitness influencer, you would just kind of like lean forward so your stomach was a little crunched to be like, guys, I am just like you. And yeah. I'd be like, holy
guess what?
Shit.
I don't want to live in that reality. And yeah, like just to circle back of like, again, not being all good and bad. I mean, again, yeah, health, fitness, all of that can be great. And I know a lot of folks, especially who struggle with mental illness, getting into running or movement.
The endorphins are so good.
Really helps them. And yeah. It's one of the things, if I had a dollar for every doctor who has told me, have I gone outside, I would be rich. But it works. I hate that it works.
Yeah. I'd be like, girl, I would if it wasn't raining all the time.
I know. And if I had serotonin levels, which I don't. But just keeping it real. But, you know, it's just that kind of constantly being sold something. And yeah, as you said, I mean, we live in attention economy, right? So our attention spans, which are garbage, are really the currency.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like it's the fuel for everything, really.
Yeah.
You can't be complaining about the thing and consuming the thing at the same time because it's not your fault, but it also is like what is affecting. It's effective, you know?
Absolutely.
So
Yeah. And you have to really have some distance from it to actually be able to critique it. I don't think I could be following fitness influencers and constantly seeing that. I mean, yeah, sure, I am generally someone who's very skeptical, but I would totally buy into that. I mean, if I'm constantly told thin is better and I'm constantly shown hot bodies on Instagram, then I would look at myself and feel icky and self-conscious and deep down feel like something is wrong with me and I need to work on myself.
Yeah.
And treat myself as if I were a printer.
Printers. And like I'm loosely grafting this from something that I heard Ezra Klein say on an interview once, so like I apologize to anyone who knows better than me, but there's this idea that like we're just passive consumers online, you know, that stuff just happens to us, we just like eat it up and we're just taking it all in, and I think that we're not as passive as we would like to imagine we are. Like, we are pretty conscious in our choices.
Or we can be.
And we can be. Yeah, I mean, there are algorithms who are going to shuffle stuff up and show it to you regardless.
And they're sneaky.
They're sneaky. But, like, you also still have will and choice in these matters. And I kind of agree with the idea that we need to throw away this sense of, like, I am just passively sitting back and letting the content wash over me. And I have no say or choice in all of it. Like, I followed all of those Instagram.
For sure.
I said Instagram influencers. My God. I followed all of those fitness influencers.
I mean, kind of the same thing.
But yeah. I know. It's reductive. But the passivity of it all, I think, needs to change a little bit.
I like that sentiment. It kind of, again, is a way to take power back.
Mm-hmm.
And also, again, they need you, ultimately, which
Hell
we forget.
Yeah.
They need us. But also, there is so much of this infantilization tone that goes on.
Mm-hmm.
And we kind of buy into that, like the way, again, some influencers would talk to you as if, like, we don't know anything and we're, like, small little babies.
Yeah. Like, coach, please help me.
You know,
yeah.
We're like really helpless. And obviously, again, going back to the utilitarian language, a fit body is tied to everything. It's tied to happiness. It ties to wealth. It's tied to romance. It's mm-hmm. just like fit as a virtue. Fit, the morality attached to it.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
Deeply worrying
mm-hmm.
and almost like something is inherently wrong with you if you're not seeking the same thing out, like as if you are... I don't know, on the fringe.
Yeah, I mean, that's why
or demonic.
For a while people would say things, or like nutritionists would say, like, guilt-free snack. Like, the word guilt is used in a really obvious way.
Cheat meals?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and this is more in the nutrition side of things, but it all is kind of connected.
Yeah.
I think, the virtue of the fit body is embedded in the language as well.
And this is, great time to talk about the song I played, because I was going to say it's almost as if this fitness was a religion. I played New Religion at the top of the episode by Migrant Motel.
Yeah, and top of the hour, we heard Nearly Daffodils by English Teacher
mm-hmm.
off of the album Nearly Daffodils.
Wow, what a great segue. Well, we have 4 minutes left until we end this episode. And this has been dope. I want to thank everyone or anyone who was listening to us.
I want to thank everyone and anyone. Yeah, this has been really fun. Thanks for digging into words with me for the last year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming on this Word Goblins journey with us.
Forever grumpy in our hearts.
Forever hostile but friendly hosts. Or friendly but hostile, depending on the day.
Yeah, I'd say that's ordered depending on how I'm feeling, for sure.
Yeah, okay. Well, long weekend coming up.
Mm-hmm. It's not goodbye. It's...
See you later.
See you later.
As Vin Diesel would say. So long.
turn my wheel to feel myself steal the Achilles good heel, and I didn't want to weird her out, no doubt. So I felt myself write something mildly committal, where I styled around with esoteric terms who articulate the profundity in our words. Contemporaries got it locked so strange, called it Little Man, Atomic Bomb code name, Miss Wilding, Mr. Weapon, repartee on every other day. I know about games and the games they play, just remember what we used to say. Miss Wilding, Mr. Weapon, repartee on every other day. I know about games and the games they play, just remember what we used to say. Deep down.